Hello.
Hey, baby.
Welcome back to our second chit chat episode. Chitting and chatting. My name is Amy.
My name is Blair.
And this is Honey, We Need to Chat.
Let's get to it.
Yeah, well, we are going to be having a quick chat today about some stuff that we've found really interesting, or I found really interesting. Blair hasn't really explored it yet in terms of relationship communication styles. But to start us off, we're going to do a little bit of a fun thing that Blair's going to take the lead on.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want to kind of do this at the beginning of every chit chat. I think I was explaining this last time, so I'm not going to explain it every time. Just a little bit of icebreaker. It gets us into the rhythm of it and it's fun. I have fun doing it.
Yeah.
So just going to go into from the very beginning. It's funny because I sent these to you on Messenger and there's things before. What is that?
What?
Oh, that's what it is. I was trying to figure out what this was. This is the
quiz thing. What do you call
it? Was it called? I don't know. Quiz a
riddle.
Riddle. Mm. Yeah, I hit Amy's phone earlier.
It was very funny,
and I had so much fun. I got ChatGPT to try and help make a riddle out of where it was. And yeah. You found it in like 2 seconds.
But
no, you didn't find it in 2 seconds.
No, but let's backtrack and say that you sent me the riddle.
Yep.
On my phone.
Yep.
Which I didn't have.
Yeah.
So then I just didn't have a phone.
Well, no, but you had your phone, your watch.
Yeah. Well, when you told me. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was fun. So that's what that is on this iPad right now. All right, cool. So the first question I have for you, if you had to eat one meal every day for the rest of your life, and I think I know what it is, and let me guess it before okay. You say it, what would it be and who in the family would complain first?
Oh.
That second part, 100% me.
You, yeah.
And it's Gnocchi.
Gnocchi?
Yeah. No?
No.
Well, you always get Gnocchi when we go out. And I'm like, I don't get it.
I thought you were going to say mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah. No, but would you actually, would that be the
100%.
One? 100%. Okay. Well, that's just
Gnocchi, wow. I mean, I do like Gnocchi.
So I don't get it. I don't understand why people go out and buy pasta meals at a restaurant. It doesn't make sense to me.
It's because you're not a pasta person.
Well, I do. I really enjoy bolognese.
At home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so expensive when you go out.
I like creamy pastas like carbonara or penne with like chicken.
Hmm.
And you don't like those as much. I don't make them that much at home.
Hmm.
So when I go out, I want to eat it.
But you're paying like $100
but also,
for a pasta meal.
Someone else is
that's
cooking
an exaggeration.
For me, and that's amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
You never make me pasta.
I still don't get it.
No, you make spaghetti sometimes.
Yeah, I still don't get it.
That's all right.
But yes, I'd definitely be the first person to complain.
And what would be yours?
Barbecue, straight up. First person to complain would be you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're
I love
well
barbecue.
Matched.
Yeah.
Well
matched. What's one tradition that you started in our family to strengthen our family bond?
Mm.
Or what's one that you want to?
Yeah. I have no idea. Do you have one in mind?
So ones that you keep talking about are dopamine hit.
Oh, fast.
Like fasting. Yeah, yeah. So putting that into place. Reading days. Like just being, you know, having that as something. I think a lot of the things that you want to do, our kids are just a little bit too young for.
100%.
Not the dopamine hit one, but like, well, I don't really fully understand what that fast would look like if it's just other than screens, like because that seems easy to me, but I feel like there's more to that.
There is more, yeah.
We can talk about that another time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and definitely the reading day.
My dream with the reading day is I would love for there to be a day where we all have a book and we just read all day. Yeah. We find a comfy area of the house. We make yummy like cookies or something comforting, so special like cooking together to prepare for it. And we maybe even get takeaway or something and we just read all day.
Yeah. What we realize as well is like traditions or whatever, it's really cool when you've got food involved.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes it. So for me, my tradition has been Christmas stuff, but I'm not sure if this is tradition or it's trying to hone in the tradition that my kids will come home for Christmas is I try and put cinnamon in everything.
You do.
So I get them to think about Christmas all the time.
It's in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that works.
You have finally gotten better at your percentage of cinnamon yeah. to other ingredients.
Well, I don't taste their drink after I make it. I just put it in.
Well, they like it. So yeah. You've done very well.
All right. Last one. If you could choose any TV show family to be a part of for a week, which one would it be and why?
Family. I don't know. I don't watch a lot of family-based shows. I can think of a TV family, like friendship family, that would be a part of. 100% New Girl.
Yeah, definitely.
100%.
The Office, Parks and Rec.
I don't know if I'd want to be a part of The Office for a week.
I definitely would.
Would you?
Yeah, give me a boring job. I don't care. That'd be fun.
Yeah. But New Girl, that'd be so fun to hang out. We could play True American.
We'll be the first people to know what that actually is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So The Office is your answer? Oh, that's not really family. Do you have a family in mind?
No. Mm. No, I just had that question and I didn't have an answer for it.
I think maybe if I had to do a family, I'd go Gilmore Girls and I'd just be in the Gilmore Girls family.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that. No, I actually don't have an answer.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of is Modern Family, but yeah, I feel like that would irritate me.
I don't think I'd want to be in the family.
No, not for a week.
It's just fun to observe from the outside. What about Band of Brothers? They're brothers.
That would be the best family.
And that'd be so fun to be in for a week.
I love it.
With no downsides at all, like death. All right. Well, thank you for breaking the ice, baby. So the topic that we're going to chat about today is there is a very well-known relationship psychology institute called the Gottman Institute, and they are all about relationship and, you know, a lot of marriage resources and that kind of thing. And in the Gottman Institute is a framework that Gottman has put together. We've got a quiz, and they've got like a whole ton of resources around this concept called the Four Horsemen.
Isn't it like end time stuff?
Yeah. Well, it's based off end times. So it's basically in end times, it's in the Bible, it talks about the four horsemen that are going to predict the end of times, basically. Uh-huh. And so that's why they're using that name, because these four horsemen in relationships predict the end of relationships.
Huh?
And they are four communication systems.
It's like a doom and gloom.
Yeah. Well, no, chat. It's a,
how are we going to end?
It's a, let's be aware.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep. So these are four relationship communication styles, and that's right up our alley because, as you know, communication is where it's at for us. And these styles or patterns, if they are present in relationships, are strong indicators of how successful that relationship will be, or the other way around, how unsuccessful they will be. So I just thought tonight we could just run through them. So there's four, and they're fairly, some of them are fairly obvious, some of them maybe you wouldn't think about so much, but they also have, thankfully, the antidote to the four horsemen, which are the opposite things you can do to counteract these if they are patterns in your relationship. So I'll run through the styles and then we can discuss, I guess, a little bit about how that might play out in a relationship, where we see it and that kind of thing. So basically Gottman in the works is talking a lot about how there's ways you can communicate through relationship. And they also really specifically clarify that it's not that conflict is in a relationship that means you're kind of doomed. It's how it's managed. So they're really clear on, like, it's actually a good thing to have conflict. It's important because that means you're working through things. But how you manage conflict is what can kind of be an indicator of how healthy the relationship is going.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, like I said, those antidotes that you can focus on if you want to kind of change some of that behavior and replace some of the destructive patterns with healthy communication habits.
All right. So just to be clear, because this sounds like, a very doom and gloom thing. So what it's pretty much saying is like, all right, we're cool. We all have conflicts. This is a measure this isn't necessarily saying if you don't meet these things, your relationship sucks.
No, it doesn't necessarily mean that. But if these are present in your relationship, and you'll see as we read them, your relationship is rocky.
Mm-hmm.
And if the patterns continue and they're not dealt with, it is a high indicator, one of them in particular more than others, that it will not last, or it will be very
hard,
toxic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm just going to start and we can explore that a little bit more. And it's basically, they say within minutes of discussing with a couple in a therapy session, these four horsemen can indicate where that couple's at if the psychologist is recognizing them in there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the first one is criticism. And basically, I mean, everyone knows what criticism is. It's where you're attacking your partner in some way or another in their character. And it's really important when they're talking about criticism, they're clarifying that it's not the same as complaints. Mm-hmm. So it's not like someone complaining about something is automatically criticism. This is criticism is specifically when a partner attacks their partner's character. Mm-hmm. So they have an example here to like make the difference between the two. A complaint is, I was scared when you were running late and you didn't call me. Mm-hmm. That's a complaint and it's valid. Mm-hmm. It's not criticism. Criticism is you never think about how your behavior is affecting other people. Mm-hmm. It's like an attack on, you never think about that. That's mm-hmm. like a solid statement mm-hmm. about the person's character. And this is something that I feel like, especially I feel like in the young kids stage, probably in any stage, but especially in the young kids stage when you're tired and everything's very full on and it's like overwhelming, I feel like this kind of thing can really easily sneak into relationship, like criticizing the other person's behavior without even realizing it. And I think there's a little bit of a culture within marriage sometimes. Not always from the woman's side, but I have experienced it myself. I've felt it myself and I've experienced it in some of the groups that I'm a part of where mom's just really critical of the dad's behavior. Hmm. And it probably goes the other way too in some relationships, but it seems like there's some like often really valid reasons that they're like complaining about the behavior of their partner. So it's not, and when I say complaining, I guess that's where like we need to be really clear that we're not mixing up complaint with criticism, but I think it really easily slips into criticism, and especially when it's a continual behavior. It's definitely something that I feel like I could easily do and something that I've seen other people do. So Gottman talks about the antidote to criticism is called a gentle startup. And that's basically where instead of attacking the character, you focus on the specific behaviors without blame. And you use I statements to express your feelings and your needs. So for an example, criticism would be, you always talk about yourself. Why are you so selfish? Whereas using this gentle startup would be, I'm feeling left out and need to vent. Can we talk about my day? Mm-hmm. So it kind of takes away the statement about the person's character or their intent. And it makes it more about what you're needing and what you're not getting in that moment. And it's gentle approaching that. Mm-hmm. So that is the first horseman, criticism.
I think that's like, you know, I don't know if we've ever spoken about this before, but in my mind, I don't have a concern that you're going to go to your group of friends and criticize me to them. And I don't do that to my friends about you. I think I would discuss difficult things with them. Mm-hmm. Like, look, this is something that like, you know, what's your perspective on the situation Amy and I are dealing with when it's not too personal. But it's just like, yeah, I think, you know, having that rule in place, I think it's just been an unspoken rule for you and I, but having that rule in place is I'm not going to bitch about you in front of my friends. Mm. I will discuss difficult topics with them, but I won't ever put you down to my friends. And I don't have that fear that you're going to do that about me as well. Because straight off, I'm just like, oh man, yeah, like if you did that to me, I would feel so unsafe with you.
Yeah.
Like I would feel that... all right, Amy's gone out with her friends. What's she going to say about me now? Mm. But then it's like, all right, but what's she not saying to me? Mm. You know, and I think I would be insecure and unsafe in our relationship because I don't know what you're actually thinking or feeling or what you're saying to other people.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether that's like something you actually feel or something that you're just trying to get into the conversation about and, you know, bitch about me to fit into the conversation.
Caught up in the culture.
The drama.
Actually, and, I think is a legit thing that does happen.
Oh, absolutely. And it definitely happens with guys as well. You know what I mean? Like it's, and yeah, it's very much the case there for guys too. It's not just unique to females, but so that's the first thing that comes to my mind when you say that. Yeah. It's like, man, if you did that, I would just feel so unsafe in our relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why it's really important to keep yourself in check because I think, I don't know what it's like for guys. I can't talk from a guy's perspective, but it is really easy to slip from complaint into criticism. It's really easy if you're not careful with that line. And I think it's more, like I said before, like a repetitive behavior. It's like a repetitive tone or repetitive, whatever, that probably easily, like, it makes it easier for you to slip into there. But, you know, like you said, talking through something that's difficult or frustrating and trying to workshop it with someone who you trust is very different to being like, this is what Blair does. Blair does this all the time. Blair is this. That's probably even more so. Blair is this. Mm. Those kinds of things. Just, it's not a constructive way of communicating. Mm. It's not going to be bringing about a good outcome.
Well, that's the thing is, like, when I have these conversations with my mates, it's to get a positive outcome. Yeah. Like, I'm having these conversations to make sense of what I'm doing, to figure out what, you know, again, I want that positive outcome. I want the outcome to be that you and I are in a stronger relationship from it. It's never to bring you down to someone else and vent.
Yeah.
It's, I just don't think that's healthy. I think there's other ways to deal with frustration than bitching to someone else about it.
Mm. And this is specifically the communication between couples.
Yeah.
More so than what you're doing. It's 100%. If it's happening outside, it's going to be.
I think it's an attitude thing, right? Like, if you're doing it with each other, you'll be doing it with other people. I think it's just in general, like the critiquing in general. I'm sort of more getting it. Yeah.
And I guess that's why it's not, this is super common. It's like, I think this would be something that every person at some stage has struggled with to some extent, whether it's become a habit or not.
Baby break.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and you can email us
the tube
at honeyweneedtochat on all platforms. honeyweneedtochat@gmail.com is our email address. You can contact us and submit questions. You can submit your stories. You can give us suggestions, constructive advice.
Outfit advice if you're on YouTube. Advice. I need it. Please
be
help.
Be gentle, please. Thank you. Yes, please email us, follow us, like, subscribe. And we would also love for you guys to share this podcast, because our whole heart behind this is to create a community that is passionate about communication, basically.
Mm, and growing our relationships.
Exactly. Yeah. So please like, subscribe, share, all of those special things. Thank you. Anyway, as I was saying, you know, it's a fairly common thing, I think, for people to navigate. But the positive side of this is, it's not a pattern that can't be broken, and it's not something that you can't do something practical about. And if it is something that you're like, oh, actually, yeah, I think I slip into that, or even I'm noticing my brain is slipping into that more and more, because I think it's probably a slope. Mm. Using this gentle startup tactic, even when you don't feel like it, I think is a really good way to start turning that around. I think that's a big one too. Like, when you don't feel like it, it's not going to feel, especially if you're in patterns like this, it's not going to feel easy, comfortable, or enjoyable to all of a sudden change your attitude towards your partner. But I think you have to sit there sometimes and think, what do I want my future to be? Like, what do I want our future as a couple to be? And if I'm satisfied with the idea of us being critical of each other for the rest of our lives, then that's a different thing. But I don't think most people would say that. I think most people would really want a stronger relationship going forward. So it's just a bit of a process, but definitely things that can be done to change the attitude. So that is horseman one. Now moving on to horseman number two, contempt. Contempt involves disrespect, sarcasm, mockery, or insults towards your partner, and it implies moral superiority and can make your partner feel despised and worthless. So just to also quickly say, I'm getting all of this from the Gottman website, which is just gottman.com.
Yep.
So I'm literally taking some of their words because they obviously word it best. Contempt is basically open disrespect, mockery, that kind of attitude. And it implies that you are better than. It says moral superiority. So you're better than, you know better than, you do better than, that kind of thing, than the other person. And the example they have is, you're tired, cry me a river. I've been with the kids all day, running around like mad to keep this house going. And all you do is come home from work, flop down on the sofa like a child, and play those idiotic video games. I don't have time to deal with another kid. Could you be any more pathetic? That kind of a statement. What I think is interesting is this contempt example. It is a good one because it shows you things that you're like, yeah, that would be annoying.
You can
see where these things start. They're not just out of the blue for the most part. It's not someone who just decides they want to be contemptful.
Because, like, yeah, I hear that as well. I'm like, yeah, too right.
Yeah,
get off your ass. Yeah, do something, you know. And I, you know, trying to be not too picky at these other people. Like I struggle with that sometimes too, right? Like we all go through those lazy moments. But I think it's, you know, one thing that I'm thinking through this is like, it's not necessarily that something has been said. It's not that something's been said. Something needs to be said in those situations. I think what these things are doing and what we're wanting to do on this podcast is how we have those conversations. Mm-hmm. Like the conversations are what's important.
Yeah.
And like that situation right there is like that needs to be addressed. Like it definitely does. Mm. But how do you this is the hard part, and cut this if this is going to be a ramble. But then my mind goes down to, well, then how do you have that conversation? Yeah. But I think I'm getting away from the point of this section and more down to that scenario.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the antidote does kind of talk about how you can kind of move away from those things too. But yeah, exactly. How do you have, it's all about, and that's what they said at the beginning. It's not that you're having conflict. It's how you're managing conflict.
Yeah,
that is what's the biggest predictor of success in relationship. So contempt, this is really interesting. This is straight from their website. It says, research even shows that couples that are contemptuous of each other are more likely to suffer from infectious illnesses like colds and the flu, than others because their immune system is weakened, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
And it also is obviously in a relationship, contempt damages both sides. But I also, throughout life and, you know, people, you interact with people that have gone through different things, and I've gone through different things. And there's been multiple times where, you know, there's a someone's been hurt. And so they're like, I'm going to hold a grudge, and, or like, I'll never forgive them, or that kind of a, like, behavior. And it's almost like, yeah, stick it to them. Mm. And I've always thought that doesn't hurt anyone except yourself. Like bitterness that sits inside genuinely hurts you physically.
Absolutely.
And this is an exact example of how that happens. Like, contempt in your heart literally weakens your immune system.
Yeah. That's so fascinating.
So interesting.
But like, I think you made a really good point then. Like, yeah, when have I ever been bitter towards someone and felt good about it?
Yeah.
Like never. Like it's, it sucks. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks for you.
Yeah.
Like it might hurt the other person in terms of them being like, oh, that does not feel good. But then they can go about their day and do their thing. No matter how horrible they've been to you, no matter what they've done. The only person you're punishing is yourself, because then it's stuck in your head. It goes in the loop. It's like constantly impacting how you make decisions. It might even make you more sick if this is true. Like, that is just so insane.
Mm.
So fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's so counterintuitive. It makes you feel, that's why people are like, yeah, never, like, they don't deserve your forgiveness or whatever. They don't, but it's not about them. It's about you. It's so interesting. And anyway, the other thing that they say about contempt is the single greatest predictor of divorce.
Wow.
So this is a powerful, powerful one. And I think it almost, I don't know if they talk about this because I haven't done enough research, but it feels like they flow from one to the other. Like, I feel like criticism would come first and then contempt for the most part. You can see how it'd be a natural progression if it was unchecked and there wasn't anything brought up. So the antidote to contempt is build appreciation and respect. And they say, create a culture of appreciation and respect in the relationship. Express gratitude and affection regularly to maintain positivity. And they say, aim for 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative interactions. So 5 positive to every 1 negative interaction. The example they have using this antidote is the contempt example is, you forgot to load the dishwasher again. Ah, you're so incredibly lazy. Rolls eyes, they'd say. The antidote is, I understand that you've been busy lately, but could you please remember to load the dishwasher when I work late? I'd appreciate it.
I could see how exhausting that would be, though, if you said it for the 100th time.
Oh, 100%.
And I could see, like, again, like, you know, it's not saying that these are the easy ways. It's just saying that, and I think that's the thing is, like, if you came to me and only you had looked through this, like these four horsemen things, and you were trying to bring that into our relationship solo, that's so unhealthy. Like, in my perspective,
bring the antidotes solo.
Like, this is something that needs to be done together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And identified together and worked on together.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just feel like that in my head, I feel exhausted for the person that's trying to bring around their relationship on their own.
But, what if the other person isn't willing?
Yeah.
So you only have the control over yourself and your actions.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, like, sometimes, actually probably lots of times, especially if there's like solid patterns of toxicity. Sometimes it's one person that's ready first to make a change.
Yeah,
you
true.
Have to force, you have to just force yourself to stick to it. And not to get too personal, but growing up, I had many conversations with my parents about this exact thing, because there would be, you know, whatever complaints on both sides. And I would be like, why don't you just do that thing that you know that they want, regardless of what they're saying? I remember saying this so many times. And obviously, it's easy when you're not in
yeah.
a situation, and especially when you're like a 14-year-old kid. It's easy. It feels easy. But I feel like sometimes there is, if you're really wanting to transform your marriage, sometimes you just have to do the hard thing before the other person is ready.
Mm.
And so, yes, this is exhausting. And if you had to do this 100 times before you saw a positive, that sounds really exhausting. But then you still have seen a positive.
Yeah.
You've still seen a change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So depending on where you're at and what you want for the future, this could be worth it, even if it's...
Oh, absolutely. It's not to say it's not worth it.
No,
I'm
no,
just
no.
like...
Exhausting.
Just getting, I'm getting tired for that person.
I was thinking too, it's a little bit like exercise, right? So like, you know, to be fit and healthy, we need to move.
Mm.
The easy option is to sit on the couch. The hard option that feels better is to kind of be like, push our bodies to do something that's not comfortable, to then get better at pushing our bodies to do something that's not comfortable. It doesn't feel easy. It doesn't feel what you want to do.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's kind of like there's, you know, they talk about in psychology with the pattern, your brain, whatever you call it, the neuro tracks basically that happens in your brain when you're doing behaviors. The stronger ones are from the repetitive behaviors. That's the easy option.
Yeah.
The hard one is forcing your brain to do something else. But then eventually that becomes easier. I feel like that's this kind of thing, like pushing real hard on the brakes of these toxic communication styles and then like turning it around really slowly. That's how I picture it. But
yeah, it's a good picture.
But worth it in the long.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They say the antidote here works so well because it expresses understanding straight away. So you're not putting them on the defense right away. You're saying, I understand that you're busy, but I really need you to do these dishes while I'm working late or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this partner shows how they know the lack of cleanliness isn't out of laziness or malice. So they're not making a contemptuous statement about that partner or taking any kind of moral superiority. So they're not acting like they're better than them. They're not making a statement about that person's motives. I think that's really big too. Being like, you never do this. You're always like lazy. You only think about yourself kind of thing. That makes a statement about their motives. And that would be immediately for the other person to be like, you don't know what I was doing. You don't know why I didn't do it. So this is like saying, I know you're busy, but can you please do this? So yeah, that's contempt. And I think this sounds really intense and obvious, but I think there would be ways that contempt can be in your relationship that's pretty subtle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without even realizing it. Especially internally.
And this is where we like with this, every episode of this podcast, we want to encourage you to do with your partner, because it's like you go through these things together. Like it's that check. It's that, and again, biggest reason why we want to do this podcast is this is Amy and I are practicing our communication. Yeah. We're wanting to grow in this. So going through this is something that we want to do to strengthen that. So we really want to encourage you guys to do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So number three, horseman, defensiveness. Defensiveness is typically a response to criticism. So criticism is the first one, obviously, that we just went through. Someone telling you why you're doing something, someone telling you what you're doing wrong kind of thing about your character, what is wrong about you, I guess. And then defensiveness is typically a response to that, which makes sense. It's kind of a natural response. And it often makes excuses for something or plays a victim. And so when we feel unjustly accused, we fish for excuses and we play innocent victim so that our partner will back off. So we're like, yeah, that's not fair because of this, this, and this or whatever. And hoping that the partner will back off of their criticism or whatever's going on. But the other thing that defensiveness does is it often shifts the blame to the other partner, which stops it becoming a problem you can work through because you're shifting blame. It's not going anywhere. You're just making it on the other person. So the example they have is, did you call Betty and Ralph to let them know we're not coming tonight as you promised this morning? And the defensive response would be, I was just too busy. As a matter of fact, you know how busy my schedule was. Why didn't you just do it?
Yeah.
And I feel like defensiveness is probably, if I was to pick one that I think I see the most in, or I see from my side at least, the most in our relationship, I think defensiveness would be one. if caught off guard, I think that's when it can come up really a lot easier. Like if we're in a good mental space and it's not like chaos and we're like thinking clearly, or we've had, you know, it's coming from a gentle place, I think we're pretty good. But I think if we're caught off guard, that's when defensiveness can slip in. And I thought it was really interesting when I was reading about it, that it's not just about being like, no, because of this, this, and this, like backing yourself up. It's actually ending up turning the blame onto someone else. Like a lot of the time shifting that blame onto the other person in whatever way. And that's something that I think is, I would never have identified that as part of defensiveness, but makes sense how it's so debilitating, because then you're getting nowhere in the problem. You're just blaming the other person, blaming the other person. It's like playing tennis with blame. And the antidote to defensiveness is taking responsibility. So accepting responsibility, even if you're only responsible for part of the conflict, avoiding blaming your partner and acknowledging your role. So the example they give is, if you were to be defensive, you'd say, it's not my fault that we're going to be late. It's your fault, since you always get dressed at the last second. Whereas the antidote could be, I don't like being late, but you're right. We don't always have to be so early. I can be a little bit more flexible, which is a very, very, very generous.
that sparks a trigger in my head, to be honest. Yeah. But I think, like, I was going to ask you though, with that, and, you know, you said that you feel, and I think I would agree, but not knowing the rest of the ones that are coming up, like defensiveness is definitely something that we've had to tackle in the past. How do you feel that we approach defensiveness in the other person and in ourselves? Like, what's that process? Like, if you see me get defensive, how do you react? If you notice that you're getting defensive, how do you react?
Yeah, I think, well, again, it depends on the situation. So if I'm in a good headspace, I think there have been times where I've been able to be like, hey, I wasn't trying to say that. I'm just trying to say this and like try to clarify. I'm not trying to attack you, and then maybe try and reword what I've said. But there have definitely been arguments we've had where we spark up and we're just not in a good headspace and we don't have that conversation well at all. It's like back and forth a little bit. And then we take a bit of a break and then we're able to come back. And that's when the defensiveness is gone, which I think is normal too. I don't think that's like defensiveness to me, obviously it's on the list. So obviously if it's a huge part of your relationship, probably is not a great sign. But I also think it could be a pretty natural like process, and hopefully less and less as you get better at communicating. Yeah. But
well, I think all of these are a spectrum, right? Yeah, like exactly. All of these are like these. I feel like these are just like the intense version of what they're talking about here. But when you were speaking through that, I was thinking through that. I was trying to put ourselves in that scenario, and we don't get this right all the time. But I really feel that, because this has been, I as well agree, out of the three that we've talked about so far, this is one that we struggle with the most. And I feel like, all right, so if you are struggling with defensiveness, it'd be like, all right, we'll leave it there. Or it's like, hey, or I'll call it. I think you're being defensive. Or it's like, let's come back and talk about this in a little bit, because you might not be in that good headspace.
Yeah.
I think that's one big thing that we've identified, is knowing when to have the conversation.
Yeah.
If we're not in that space to have the conversation, have a breath, we'll come back to this. Something that you really wanted back in the day, early days with us, you brought this in, was that you had to be given permission to say, not right now.
Yeah.
And I needed to be able to know that, but we will have the conversation. Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just like, all right, so for me, I have to talk about it, and I'll talk about it right then and there. Where Amy, like, well, it's funny though, because this is me thinking, this is all over the place, because last time we spoke about, last time we spoke about in difficult situations, I go quiet, you go loud. But in this situation, it was the other way around.
I think it's the give and take of it. So I think if you're the one that's bringing something up, you have to talk about it right.
True.
If I brought something up, you have to think, because it's like your brain goes into shock.
Yeah.
Another way around. If you're bringing something up to me, I have to be able to think.
Yeah.
If I'm bringing something up to you, I need to be able to process and process.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
It is a different.
So early days, Amy just couldn't have those conversations, and I'd get frustrated because I'm just like, why aren't we talking? We need to talk about this. This is important. We need to talk about it. And then I can't remember if we came up with this, or someone probably gave us this advice. I can't remember, but either way, it was that you need the permission to say, I can't talk right now. I need to think about this, but I needed you to hear. I needed to have confidence that we will talk about it at some point.
It's not just
not talked about. Yeah. So that was going in place. And I think another thing that we do now too is that, because I know that when I get defensive, I'll come back later and I'll apologize and I'll be like, all right, cool. And then we have that conversation again as well. Yeah. So I think there's two parts. There's one, recognizing when you struggle and I'm like, all right, this is probably not a good time, but I'm going to come back to it. And that's more my nature, as I won't leave something like that. But at the same time, if I've noticed that I've been defensive, it's my responsibility to come back to you, apologize and try and work through it again.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of conversations are just once off.
No.
I think a lot of conversations are a series of conversations over the same thing until you can do it well.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the first conversation is a reactionary conversation. Yeah. Then it's a matter of the conversations after that are like, all right, mending and then like getting to solutions sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It definitely, like, it's the caught off guard thing for me specifically. Mm. Like, that's when if I have time to think about what I'm going to talk about, I feel like my brain tends to try and make it as gentle as I can initially. Sometimes it sparks up in the conversation, but if there's something that I haven't had time to think about and I'm just like, bam, that's when the defensive flag goes up. But yeah, exactly. Coming back to it when we've had space, which is a really good segue into the fourth one.
Oh, did it.
Meant which is it. Stonewalling. So stonewalling is withdrawing from interaction, shutting down, or not responding. And it often occurs in response to contempt. So the other one. And it can signal overwhelming negativity. So if you feel like you're stonewalling during a conversation, stop the discussion and ask your partner to take a break. So basically stonewalling is when there's discussions, disagreements, whatever's going on, a problem, and you're just shut down. Like, you're not interacting at all. And so this suggestion here is, all right, I'm feeling too angry to keep talking about this. Can we please take a break and come back to it in a little bit? It'll be easier to work through after I've calmed down, which again, that's a beautiful statement. But when you're upset, that's not how eloquently that will be said.
But I think that's, again, something that we strive towards. Because they weren't the conversations that we had at the beginning.
No.
Like, we were frustrated. We were angry. Yep. We were upsetting each other. We were doing all those sorts of things because we were learning to have the conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's, I think it's lovely, but I think it's still something you can work towards.
I think you can work towards it. I mean, more that it's unlikely that in a heated discussion you'll be like, all right, I'm feeling too angry to keep talking about this. Yeah. Can we please take a break and come back to it in a little bit? It'll be easier to work through this after. It'd be more like, I can't talk about this right now.
Yeah.
I got to come back to this. That's about as much as I'd get out. But anyway, the antidote to stonewalling, which makes sense. Well, actually, it's really fascinating. The antidote to stonewalling is psychological self-soothing. So recognizing signs of stonewalling and taking a break from the discussion, psychologically self-soothe by engaging in calming activities for at least 20 minutes. So basically it's removing yourself because you're like, I'm going to stonewall. I'm going to shut down. I can't do this. I need to go calm down doing something and then I'll come back. And what I found really interesting, I'm just totally taking this from the website right now. They said in one of our in one of our longitudinal researches,
studies,
we interrupted couples after 15 minutes of an argument and told them we needed to adjust the equipment. We asked them not to talk about their issue, but just read magazines for half an hour. When they started talking again, their heart rates were significantly lower and their interaction was more positive and productive. What happened during that half hour? Each partner, without knowing it, psychologically soothed themselves by reading and avoiding discussion. They calmed down, and once they felt calm, they were able to return to the discussion in a respectful and rational way. So I thought that was really interesting that even in their studies, they intentionally broke the argument.
Yeah.
And then they saw even physically the heart rate and that kind of thing was calm enough for them to have these conversations. So it says avoid thoughts of indignation or victimhood during the break. So instead of going away and being like, how dare he? So their example here they've got is, look, we've been through this over and over again. I'm tired of reminding you. And then someone says, honey, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm feeling overwhelmed and I need to take a break. Can you give me 20 minutes and then we can talk? By applying these antidotes, couples can effectively manage conflict and maintain a healthy, stable relationship. So this is the way, if you're feeling like you're someone who just shuts down and stonewalls, and you're not going to be able to react. You're just going to get silent. Just break it. It's like a little circuit breaker. take 20 minutes and then you're always going to have a better conversation.
Yeah.
Always. I feel like even if you're in a really toxic relationship, even in a horrible situation, for the most part, after a break, when you've calmed down, it's at least going to be a little bit better than the conversation you were already having. You've got time to process. I feel like anytime we've ever had our big arguments, which we haven't had tons of, but we have definitely had moments where it's been like, oh, that's a bit more of an intense disagreement. It's like our brains, for me at least, it feels like my brain just goes, and I'm like kind of stuck. Like I'm just really foggy in there and I can't really think clearly. So the breaks have been really helpful when we've needed them.
I've got this picture in my head of a couple that are like arguing and the argument's so intense. And then they'll say, oh, I need a break. I can't talk about this right now. But then never come back to that conversation. Yeah. That's the other scenario that I have in my head. Like the break is good, but if you still got to come back. That's where the break is good. Yeah, otherwise it's just avoidance. And then the issue's still there. The resentment happens, the victimization, I don't know if that's the right way of saying it, but like being a victim sort of creeps in, victim mentality.
Probably that contempt creeps in.
Yeah,
that's where that would start to creep in because it'd be undiscussed, unprocessed issues that you're then just sitting there in bitterness about. None of these are positive communication patterns. All of these on that kind of spectrum in different extremes, all of these would be easy to have subtle things sneaking into your relationship, and some might not be so subtle, but I love that they've got these antidotes that like straight away kind of combat that specific pattern. And if you're feeling like you've been listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's how we communicate. It is not. This is not saying, oh, you will get divorced. This is saying if these patterns are unaddressed, if this is how you continue to go through conflict, it's going to be really difficult. You're going to have a hard time, but instead you can use these antidotes to try and kind of combat this. Yeah. And their thing, they say, understanding and addressing these patterns is crucial for maintaining a healthy relationship. So, and that's what communication is. And that's what we're all about.
Absolutely. So again, we want to encourage you guys, if you identify that you struggle with some of these things, as a couple, go through these, what is it called?
The Gottman Four Horsemen.
Is it just Google it and it'll come up?
But the Gottman website has so many things. Yeah. They've even got a quiz that they kept trying to get me to do while I was reading about this that might even, I didn't do it, but I'm sure it like would step you through whether these things are in your relationship or not, or how you can like do that. Mm. So there's so many resources. Absolutely. Check it out.
Yeah. And if that is not helping, like I just want to emphasize again, the importance and the solid resource of a counselor, like how good that is. Yeah. Like, again, I think we have this bad view of counseling, like, oh, we're not there yet or whatever. Well, I think sometimes we get that wrong view. Like we see a counselor as like a gym, you go, or like a PT, a personal trainer at a gym, like they're teaching you how to do those things. So if you need that help on having the conversation, go see a counselor. Like just get serious about it. Like don't wait, even if you're not extreme difficulty in your relationship, just go see one. Like just get those tools, get that help to have the conversation with your partner and get a stronger relationship.
Exactly. Sometimes these patterns will be so reinforced and so difficult to counteract on your own because of whatever reason. Could be patterns in your relationship, could be even your past experiences, like all of these things can play into it. And so if you're feeling like it would be too exhausting to do this on your own, having another person speak into that is not at all a weak thing. In fact, that's incredibly strong to be able to do that. So absolutely, having someone else put input in is valuable for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for joining us this week on Honey, We Need to Chat. Babe, you do so well at this. Oh, well done.
You do so well at this.
I know.
Okay.
Love it. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week. Yeah.